we not only need them, but we need each other in this process so that we can be able to ask the right questions and that they realize that they have important things to say.
Hello, welcome to Into the Fold, the Hawk Foundation podcast. I'm Ike Evans of the Hawk Foundation for Mental Health. We are coming to you today from the Robert Lee Sutherland Seminar in Austin, named in honor of the first executive director of the Hawk Foundation, Robert Lee Sutherland. The theme for this year's RLS is The State of Mental Health Recovery, Research, Training, and Practice. Our guest today is Dr. Shirelle Bellamy. She is the Director of Peer Services and Research and an assistant professor at Yale University's Department of Psychiatry. She's here today to talk about community-based participatory research. Dr. Bellamy, thanks for joining us. So you were here earlier today at one of our breakout sessions talking about community-based participatory research. Without asking that you totally recapitulate all the points that you hit during your talk, what do you consider to be a good working definition of community-based participatory research?
Community-based participatory research, otherwise known as CBPR, is a process of involving people who are of primary interest, who you're going to research in all aspects of the research process, from conceptualization all the way throughout data analysis, as well as sharing the findings in the community.
Okay, and I'm sure that, you know, as you recite that definition, you know, to a room full of pretty sophisticated people, you know, that there's a lot of, you know, head nodding and even people who say that they're, you know, they're committed to, you know, the basic idea in principle. But what tend to be some of the most salient challenges that researchers or that those who, you know, fund or sponsor research encounter in trying to, you know, put those principles into practice?
One of the first challenges we often hear about, researchers are finding it hard to engage with people in the community to get them interested in research in the first place. And so we basically tell them to hit the streets, to go out to the community, to go where it is that you're going to find the people for your target population that you're interested in researching. And that might, so for instance, my research relates to people in recovery with mental health issues around healthcare issues. So I want to go to different mental health centers, drop-in centers for consumers, clubhouses, places where people tend to hang out, or even just going into community and asking people about healthcare issues in general. So I want to make sure that I go to the places where I'm going to be able to connect with the people that I want in my research initiative. And that seems to be one of the first challenges that people have. The second challenge is then being able to translate what you're doing in an understandable, in understandable words so that everyone at the table can at least know what it is that you're trying to do. So it's really important to be able to break down what it is that you're doing. I talk about, you know, the mom test, and that is if my mother doesn't understand what it is that, you know, I'm talking about, then most people are not going to be able to understand what I'm talking about. And to me, as researchers, as scholars, if we're not able to break things down to a language that all people can relate to, then really what's the point?
Okay, so hearing you say that, it would seem to me that, you know, that one issue that arises fairly quickly is that you're talking about integrating people or persons with lived experience of mental illness, persons in recovery, consumers, whose objectives may be sharply at odds, you know, with those of a principal investigator. We're talking about people, you know, who don't have a CV. And so one question that comes to mind is, how challenging is it to be able to couch the work that you're doing, in terms that make it absolutely clear how they stand to benefit?
It really depends on one's goal in the research, you know, what it is that you're studying. I think that because for me, I do research that is about people, you know, related to social psychology, health psychology, social work, psychiatry, et cetera. It's about people with mental illness. So that makes it a bit more salient for the people that, you know, we're working with. However, I think that even if we didn't totally agree on all of the objectives of the research, to make sure that there are parts of the research that people can connect to, because if they're not connected to it, then it's not going to benefit either one of us. The other thing that's really important is to then be able to just, again, it's always about breaking it down to language that they can understand. And when we're able to do that, I've noticed that it's not so much that we have different objectives, because often if our objectives are that far apart, then it's not going to work in the first place. And usually the objectives is that people want to see something different happen for their community. And that's certainly my goal, and it's usually the goal of the people that I'm working with. So it's trying to figure out how we can best come up with some ideas and researchable questions so that we can either develop interventions or find out, ask the right questions to make sure that we get a sense of what the community needs and what's going to work best for that community.
Because following up on what you just said, it would seem to me that, that persons with mental health conditions are already accustomed to people with degrees telling them what to do, even asking for their input, and depending on the condition, and especially so if there may be some physical health condition also, you know, being poked and prodded and examined. So in your experience, I mean, how easy or hard is it for people to let their guards down and fully recognize that this is a different kind of conversation that you're trying to have with them?
I think it's really important to first say what you just said, which is that this is a different conversation. This approach to research is very different because we not only need them, but we need each other in this process so that we can be able to ask the right questions and that they realize that they have important things to say. And obviously there are going to be people at first when they join the process that they might feel that people may not listen to them, or they might be nervous about sitting around the table with a bunch of doctors, or they may not understand certain statistics or, you know, the language in certain articles. But, you know, that's why it's really important in CBPR to be able to take the time to be able to sit with people and explain all of these different things in a language that they can understand, and also check with them to make sure that they're understanding, that they're getting it, that they're still as jazzed about it as they were when they first signed up for it. Because if we don't do that, then we're bound to lose people in the initiative. And I think that would be with anybody, whether it's a person in recovery or a person with lived experience or just anyone in the community, that if it's too it's too academic, then you're going to lose the interest of, you know, any community member.
You have yourself disclosed as a person in recovery. And, you know, one thing that I wonder is, you know, just as soon as you make that disclosure, is there a danger that it might result in people simply, you know, deferring to you more as somebody who already gets it about, you know, about recovery, and thus, you know, whatever I might have to contribute is probably already old hat to you?
There's no danger in the person. The danger is within me. So even as a qualitative researcher, when I was new in the field, I had to, and this wasn't, whether it was with persons with lived experience or individuals of color who I may have thought had similar life experiences that I had to really just stay focused on listening and being present and not assuming that I knew the answers all the time. And that takes a lot of practice and a lot of work on my part to make sure that I don't shut the conversation off and that I keep asking questions and not assume that I know what it is that the person's talking about, because that is the danger, that we assume that if a person is beginning to sound like they're similar to us in some ways, that we then shut down the conversation. And this happens to me on a daily basis. So I really have to be careful not to do that, because I mean, people want to be listened to. And if I knew all the answers, then I wouldn't have to go and talk to anybody in the first place. So but it does take work, and you have to remind yourself. I learned that lesson, as I said, when I was doing qualitative research from the earlier in my career. And if you looked at the transcript, you could see that it was like Sherelle, participant. And it actually should be Sherelle, and then like a long conversation with the participant, and Sherelle, then a long conversation with the participant. And I noticed that pattern sometimes, where the more the person seemed like me, the less I was asking them for follow-up questions. And so it's just a lesson that I learned, and it's something that I apply not only to research, but even in my daily conversations with friends and family, that I just have to, you know, be cognizant of listening.
My next question just may be me looking for problems, but you know, it's a habit that you get into as a journalist, I guess, which is a hat that I used to wear. The issue of credit and attribution, I don't think that you had very much time to go into this during your talk, but I guess I'm referring to the finished product, whatever that is, whether it's a report or at some point, you know, you barnstorming and presenting your findings. Is it important to make it clear to people that, you know, the collaborative process is still going on even then?
It's important throughout, because folks don't want to feel like they've used and that they're helping your career, but they're not really getting anything out of it. Obviously, in community-based participatory research, there are going to be people who may take on a larger role. So normally we have like either co-researchers or co-chairs on initiatives. And it is my sort of way of like living in this world that people get credit for what they do. So we would make sure that, you know, on any report that we do, that at least those individuals who play key roles will have their names in published material on reports, etc. Obviously, we can't list everyone's name, and everyone does not want their name listed. But even on several of our papers at Yale Perch, we have either people in recovery who are listed as authors for their contribution. We make sure that students, undergrads, graduate students, whoever is lending their voice and actually doing the work are included and recognized.
This is Ike Evans. We're here at RLS 18 talking to Dr. Sherelle Bellamy of Yale University. And she was kind enough to free up a few minutes out of her busy day to tell us what's happening in the world of community and based participatory research. And we're so grateful for her time and for her insight. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ike.